on Comics, starting now.
Hello, loyal listeners. Today we have Derek, Kevin, and Matt, as well as myself.
Happy Oktoberfest, gentlemen.
Yes, it is Oktoberfest.
But it's not October yet.
But Oktoberfest is always the last weekend in September. I never understood it, but fucking Germans apparently can't use a calendar.
It's a preemptive celebration?
I guess, it's like pre-gaming.
You just can't wait to get into that beer.
It's pre-party.
It's like tailgating.
It was supposed to be in the end of October. Like, fuck, we can't wait a whole another month. Let's do it at the end of September.
Well, no, I mean, you think about it. You go to a football game and you tailgate before you go into the game where you drink more. This is kind of the same thing. It's like, hey, we got to get drunk before we get drunk all of October.
So. I just like their pint-sized beer steins. I need me one of those.
Those aren't pint-sized. Those are like 36 ounces. The big steins?
They have a whole... Sorry, liter. Liter.
Liter.
I had too many of those last night, and that's why I'm not speaking.
All right, getting back on track. Listeners, as you may well know, this is Drunk on Comics. This is our podcast for comic books, conventions, and all things dorky.
Nerdly nuggets of fun.
Yes. Normally we jump right on into off the shelf, but last week we had a posing question that we've continued to talk about throughout the week, and that is, if you could combine two superhero powers, or just any powers in general, because if you made it up, I'm sure there's a superhuman somewhere that has that power, what would they be, and why? And we've been continuing this conversation, coming up with some good ones, or just some terrible ones. But either or, Matt, what were some of them that you were thinking of?
I thought that maybe Ghost Rider and Kitty Pryde's power should blend, and then Ghost Rider would be an actual ghost.
He could phase his motorcycle shit, too. I mean, he wouldn't even have to steer. He just, traffic, phase through it.
Yeah.
I was talking to a couple, friends of the show, Jay Shimpo, who's a guy who's on our Artist Alley. You can check him out. Chris, who's not an artist, but a good friend of the show, talking to them just about some ideas. And Jay kind of said, he goes, you need to mix Wolverine with somebody. And so it's kind of like, well, what does Wolverine not have? And so he started listing things off, came up with one of mixing Wolverine with Northstar. So he would have super speed and flight on top of, his healing factor and his claws and all that. He would be a fucking just brutal.
See, I was trying to think, I can't think of a super person that has it, but anyone that can somehow randomly shoot their arms off as projectiles, how badass would that be for Wolverine to shoot fucking adamantium hand off?
Well, you could mix him with Rick from The Walking Dead.
And he picks up the other arm is like a sword.
See, I don't know, after reading Wolverine and the X-Men number 17, I think Wolverine and Dupe should be mixed together, because apparently Dupe's the best there is at everything else.
Yeah.
And Wolverine's the best there is at what he does. So together they'd be the best.
But would you just make Dupe look like basically give him some crazy hair and some claws? I think that would be funny.
I'm cool with the cover art that has Dupe in Wolverine's costume.
Yeah.
That about does it for me.
With Wolverine, I was thinking the exact same thing. Cannonball. Fucking, you're a speeding bolt, you go through everything, and you can just put your hands out, slice.
So he could do his own fastball special. That would actually be awesome.
I still love back in the day when they did the whole DC versus Marvel.
Oh, the amalgams?
Yeah, the amalgams. The coolest one was
Darkclaw.
Darkclaw. But my favorite part was the fact that his bad guy was Hyena. A mix of the Joker and Sabretooth.
Yeah.
That's what I thought was really twisted and cool.
Yeah.
Wow, I have to go back and...
Yeah, that actually, out of anything, is the best mixture.
That was by far my favorite.
I had a bunch of them with multiple, man.
Before we get on that, I'll stick on the Batman thing. I came up with an idea for Batman, because I started thinking about Batman. Kevin and I told you about this one. And how Batman has all of these, gadgets and toys. And he has to make them, he has to carry them around in his belt. Well, what if Batman had Inspector Gadget's powers? and he could just shoot the shit out of him. Doesn't need the Batcopter, comes out of his cowl.
Go Batcopter.
Yeah, he would have everything that he would need. No more grappling hooks, just shoot your hand up there.
But then he wouldn't be a detective, he'd be an inspector.
Well, okay.
Yeah. Part of the FBI. Inspector. Female body inspector.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, so Tony, you had some multiple man ones.
Well, multiple man in anything would be sweet. As you were kind of saying, create the BAMFs. You could pretty much have them.
Nightcrawler mixed with multiple man just makes BAMFs.
I can't remember if Boom Boom's power is to just make things explode or
who
if she's.
Fuck Boom Boom?
She's part of
the day.
Yeah.
She used to be like a bad guy and then she was a good guy. And
is she Marvel?
Yeah.
And then like when she became kind of like, hey, I'm a mutant, so now I'm just a mutant. And
yeah, she's one of the last mutants in the 198 that were still mutant powers. She could do exploding things, and I believe she explodes herself and then reforms. Could be totally off on that. But anyways, I'd pick that person's superpower with Multiple Man. He just makes copies of himself, just goes around to places and just
blows shit up.
Just blows shit up. I mean,
he'd be the ultimate terrorist.
Yeah, and he
they actually did that in the Ultimate Universe during Ultimatum. Magneto had Multiple Man, and he had Multiple Man Prime in a little like illusion, mm-hmm. but they just kept making Multiple Man and sending them out there in the world with bombs strapped to their chest.
Nice.
It was really kind of twisted, but at the same time, I loved it.
Yeah. I had an idea that we talked about last week, and happy belated birthday to you, Matthew.
Speak like a pirate day. Yarr!
Yeah.
That's today?
No, that was the 19th.
Oh, it was last week, but mixing Storm with Uncle Ben, just so that she would be dead and stay dead forever. And then I had another one, because I started thinking of other characters I hate, and this would be to mix a character with a weapon. So I'm kind of you know, changing the rules, but mix Jubilee with Ultimate Nullifier so she never existed. So
I like Jubilee. I grew up on the X-Men cartoon show where she sucked a little bit less than normal.
Did you find her hot, too?
Oh, yes, that trench coat that she wore and those goggles.
Wait, it was a trench coat? I always thought it was a rain jacket.
Whatever.
I don't know.
I think April O'Neil was sporting yellow long before Jubilation Leaf.
So, any others, guys, before we...
I thought you could, going back to Wolverine, mix Wolverine and Psylocke. Basically, you get X-23.
Well, yeah, but Psylocke, and actually that was one of the things we were talking about, kind of on a serious note, one of the things that Wolverine does not have is any kind of telekinesis or
brain is basically immune to it. Like, they multiple times say, I'm going to read your mind. He's like, nope, lots of training before.
Well, yes and no, because Quentin Quire totally fucked with him in Wolverine and the X-Men Alpha and Omega, which is the longest title ever. But he's not completely immune.
That's true.
It was at the end of it, one of the cool things was he told him, he goes, you're going to train me on how to defend myself against this in the future. You know, that was part of Quentin's punishment.
Yeah.
So, but it would be cool if he could, you know, have that, because then you've got Ultimate Ninja.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool. So, should we get into Off the Shelf?
Yeah, like I said, this topic is probably something that we'll always discuss and probably just randomly throw out sometimes throughout either. Well, not even setting aside a spot. We'll just, how we are. Oh, you guys, I just thought of another good one. This one and this one.
Well, I mean, I found myself driving down the road, you know, doing the day job, going from one place to the next, and pulling out the voice recorder, going, oh, you know, Batman and Inspector Gadget, just, you know, making notes as I'm cruising down the road, so.
Well, one of them I was thinking, too, which I didn't think I'd have time to throw out there, is Captain America. He's badass. Let's make him as big as Ego, the living planet. And you have Captain Planet!
I thought you were going to say mix Captain America with Rob Liefeld.
And you have Captain Pouches. So, but listeners as well, whenever we're talking about this stuff, hit us up on Facebook and Twitter of your ideas. Maybe we might mention them on the show. Give us some ideas that we may never have thought of.
You give us a good enough idea, who knows? Maybe we'll drop something in the mail to you.
Yeah.
No promises. It's got to be a damn good idea. But if we like it, there might be rewards.
Yeah. Just make sure you put your name on it and we'll, you know, do our effort to cite the sources.
Yeah.
Give you credit for your ideas. Because that's how we roll.
Yeah. Unless we're drunk when we stumble upon it, and then we'll be like, oh, I just told you about this.
We're this guy.
So,
you need drunker than normal.
Yeah, so getting back on topic, we're going to jump into Off the Shelf. Kevin.
Wait, before we do, Off the Shelf
Oh, yeah.
brought to you again this week. We are 4 weeks away, gentlemen. kind of crazy, from Detroit Fanfare. Is that your drum roll?
Yes.
Didn't work.
Surprise!
Detroit Fanfare is going to be October 26th, 27th, and 28th at the Hyatt Regency in Dearborn, Michigan. Definitely come check the show out. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be there. We'll have a table there so you can come talk to us, make fun of us. But even more important, we're going to be doing a live recording of our podcast there. Hecklers are welcome. Check them out on DetroitFanfare.com. You can find them on Facebook and Twitter as well. So, and then last thing, spoiler warning.
Spoiler. On the show, we like to review books that have recently come out. And in order to do a fair analysis, we are going to have to spoil the endings for you sometime. We can't keep everything in suspense. So if you are not interested in hearing the spoilers, then you feel free to turn this on pause, go read your books, and then come back to us and listen to
your
show.
I don't really know how you could really do this without spoiling it, because I mean, we're talking, what, 20 pages?
Well, yeah. 20.
You can say the title.
It's kind of like holding in a fart. You can only do it for so long.
Yeah. <You know>?
So, Kevin.
I missed last week. I'm gonna throw out some lightning reviews for this week.
What, lightning reviews with Kevin Grading Scales?
All right, okay, so first one picked up Red Lanterns Zero, written by Peter Mulligan and pencils by Adrian Syf, S-Y-A-F.
Okay.
Help me out there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Bloody. Good origin story. Way better than Green Lantern Zero. Definitely worth a pickup. I don't know much about Red Lanterns, but it got me intrigued.
Are they communists?
To be revealed.
I totally remember an old Chinese film called Raise the Red Lanterns, and it had to do about polygamous marriages in China. I don't think this is about that.
I don't think that's a tie-in.
Given the cover art, yeah. I think this is,
I'm intrigued about that.
So, scale? Grading scale on that one?
Oh, yeah. All
right.
That. Red like the Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so then next we got Star Trek Next Generation meets Doctor Who, done by IDW.
That actually sounds like it'd be kind of cool.
Assimilation is the title. Written by Scott and David Tipton, pencils Gordon Purcell, and painted by Woodward, J.K. Woodward. It's actually pretty good art, pretty good coloring, so I really like the art. The pencils,
it's kind of got a little Alex Ross thing going.
I mean, it combines two things that I really loved. I really love TNG and Doctor Who.
And Whoopi Goldberg.
And there's plenty of Whoopi. So if anyone loves the African princess in TNG, definitely go get this. But it's actually, this is a pretty long read. A lot of dialogue, still 20 some odd pages. Good one.
Story hooking you in?
Absolutely. Now, this was actually number 5, excuse me. But it's got me wanting to go back, pick up the rest, and go forward. Lastly, Bart Simpson, number 65. I know you guys will like the artwork on this.
Critical hit.
Critical hit. Yeah, on the front is basically Bart Simpson enlarged throwing 20-sided and 1d6s at other Simpsons characters.
There's a 1d8 in there.
Yeah. Written by Tony. You read the names. I can't read them, but man, I've never picked up a Simpsons book.
Tony DiGirolamo. I don't know. Pencils by Nina Matsumoto. Inks by Mike Rote, and Nathan Hamilton.
I tell you, this actually brought me back to Simpsons heyday on television, and makes me want to pick up some random issues. Cool. But especially this one is particularly nerdy because it's all about role playing, or the main story they do in here is about role playing, and there's a few other sub stories in here.
Is it like a self contained issue, or is it like going to carry on to the next one?
No. This is just like there's like 3 or 4 stories in here. The role playing. Story is the big main one.
Okay.
But there's a few other minor ones in here too. The art is very Simpsons-esque, and it's just an enjoyable read. Like I said, it brought me back to
You got three winners.
Yeah. I definitely give a oh yeah to all of them.
Awesome. Matt?
So,
lightning, zap, zap.
I did Wolverine number 313. It's the end of the Sabretooth Reborn saga. I'll call it a saga because I like that word.
So he's fully reborn now?
He's fully reborn. Well, he was never dead to begin with. And partly, as far as deaths go, I kind of like that initial, that was just a clone of Sabretooth. It kind of threw me off, but now I'm okay that, we didn't have to somehow bring Sabretooth back to life again. Like, he was just never dead. And it's the kind of, crafty bullshit that Sabretooth has been doing to Wolverine for years. So, it plays in the story.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me review this book. So, it's still big on that whole quote of, let me find it, ergo, quod sum eris, and I butchered that Latin, but I am what you will be. As Romulus keeps told Wolverine, the Weapon X program was your idea, and now I am becoming what you were. And now Romulus has full adamantium claws. He's apparently got a healing factor already because he can live forever, so on, et cetera. But they do a little. They still play with Wolverine's mind and his flashbacks, where the original, they're the ones that stole or usurped the Weapon X program from Department H in Canada, and they did it so that they could build their own empire. All right, cool. They never come out to say whether this is another lie and manipulation or if this is a hardcore truth, which leaves it kind of open-ended, whatever.
Well, that's fine, because,
Yeah, cool. It adds some depth to this, to Wolverine's story, but they haven't, committed to anything that it has to be canon. So, all right. But ultimately, it just kind of ends pretty abruptly with Sabretooth getting away, Romulus being captured. I like Wolverine says that Romulus is going to Riker's Island. He's not going to go anywhere for a while. And he makes a comment about, and it's, sometimes it's good to have contacts with the Avengers. It's like, cool, Wolverine.
No one gets out of Riker's Island.
No, never gets out of Riker's Island.
Those kids from the Hellfire Club got out in a day.
So, but the final thing is the big red-haired chick, Remus. Apparently her and Wolverine had a thing. Maybe this is why he loves red-haired women so much. And but at the very end, they're like, hey, I deserve a vacation, so we're going to go on a vacation because Remus has lots of money and she's hot. And hey, we'll bring Cloak and Dagger along because they were side characters in this whole episode. They deserve a vacation,
too. We're going to have a swingers party?
Yeah, I don't know. But it just ends with, what the hell? I deserve a happy ending. No, Wolverine, you don't. You don't deserve a happy ending yet because it's not the ending of anything. All it is, hey, we're done with this little boot, and in a couple of weeks, we'll throw you into another adventure that will probably also lead to not a whole lot.
I guess my only problem with the idea of bringing Sabretooth back is that I liked the fact that there was an ending, that Wolverine finally did kill Sabretooth. I liked it. I appreciated that. And I guess the other thing is that can Wolverine smell the difference in the scent of a clone to the real wolf?
Apparently he didn't.
Yeah.
But and then they came back and said, well, I thought something was off. It was the full beast when I was fighting him. And this isn't to, take away, because I think Jeff Loeb's been doing an excellent job on Wolverine. Mm-hmm. And the art by Simone Bianchi and the colors by Simone Peruzzi are beautiful.
Oh, they are.
And the story, I guess for me, it's just, I want a definite answer. Is this what happened to Wolverine, or is this not something that happened to Wolverine?
And I hope to God it is what his past is, because that opens up the bottle on so much
if
shit.
If he was the one that said, we got to do this and it's my idea.
I want to take over the world.
Yeah.
I am the powerful.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
So kudos for planting some really good seeds and some ideas. I guess also I just felt that it ended way too quickly with Sabretooth just exploding the building and all the people who can heal themselves get to heal themselves from the explosion and the people who can't get teleported out from Cloak. It just kind of went too quickly for me.
Okay. Well, Tony, you want to jump in or you want me to take the next one? All right, go ahead. I'll take it. I read actually another book with a Wolverine tie-in, Astonishing X-Men. Number 54 from Marvel, written by Marjorie Liu, art by Mike Perkins, and colors by J. David Ramos. The cover on this was done by Phil Noto. Now, if you guys haven't read Astonishing X-Men, the team is comprised of Wolverine, Northstar, Iceman, Warbird, Gambit, Beast, Cecilia Reyes, and Karma.
Who was the third person you said?
Iceman.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. So the team dynamic on this book is a little bit different than a lot of the rest of the X books that are out there, and this tends to be a lot more character-driven book than a lot of the other ones right now. If, for those of you that don't know, this was the title where Northstar actually married his partner, Kyle, in it. So, I mean, it's a little bit different. And one of the great things, I mean, Marjorie Liu's writing on this is fantastic, and she really seems to understand, you know, what each of the characters are about. I'm not going to get a ton into the plot of this one too much, but what I will say is that in this, the team's under control of a woman named Susan Hachi, who wants them to take over the island of Madripoor for her. And the cool part about it is that this is a throwback to the old Marvel Comics Presents Wolverine from the late 80s. And you actually get to see Tiger again, who is, you know, kind of the head of Madripoor. And you find out, if you didn't already know, that she had a little fling with Gambit, which is kind of cool, you know. But the coolest reveal of all in the book is when you see Wolverine show up in Madripoor sporting a tux as his old alter ego of Patch from back at that time. And I just thought that was really cool because I'm like, you know, Patch, well, Kevin, Patch, back in the day.
Patch Adams? What?
No, basically, it was kind of a stupid idea back at the time, but the X-Men were pretending that the world thought that they were dead, so they're all kind of in hiding. Wolverine goes to Madripoor, and nobody knows it's Wolverine because he wears an eye patch.
Yeah.
But he's got this whole...
They thought it was Nick Fury for a while.
Yeah, or Cable.
The Cable never had an eye patch.
So... Anyway,
that
was the cool part. The end of this book has Iceman falling into a pit of molten steel, kind of like the end of Terminator 2, which leads to the question of what really could kill Bobby Drake. You know, so, I mean, it's a good thing. I wanted to bring this one up because, all in all, you know, it's a good book in the X-Men series that doesn't get bogged down in all the other crossover events. It's not outside the universe by any means, but kind of like, well, it's kind of like Uncanny X-Force. They just have their own thing going. What happens out there still affects it, but it's not tied in. Now, I'm not super familiar with Mike Perkins' art, but I got to say, it is really top notch. Nice layouts, colors by Ramos add a lot of good emotion as well. It's worth picking up, and even though it was in the middle of a story arc, which I've been reading, it's an easy enough book for anybody to jump right into. So, good read.
All right. I have a fantastic duo of book reviews. Doing Fantastic Four 610, which is then going into FF number 22. Both of them written by Hickman. It's his last run on Fantastic Four before he's getting shipped over, I forget to which titles.
Hickman's doing Avengers, I thought.
Yeah, Avengers. And then I believe Ryan Stegman is also leaving the team and going to his own another book series as well.
I don't know where. Well, he hasn't announced yet. Last I know is that he's got something pretty secret.
But I've been pissed he's not going to be on this because I've loved his art.
Yeah,
he did the cover art for both of them. FF though, the artist was Andrea Arahuo. So the art's a little bit different in that one, but still all right. But like I said, the Hickman Stegman combo is what really got me to follow these books and love the writing, and I've loved the drawing, and it's definitely need to pick up, and especially the covers for both of them, put them together, and it's kind of like a poster there. But getting into the story, Fantastic Four, this whole thing revolves around Bentley, number 23. Back in the day, the Wizard, which I feel is the dumbest name for a genius, but it's not anything of a wizard. He's
not like that... old movie with Fred Savage.
Who's
really good at Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yes, the Wizard.
Okay.
He's that boy. Anyways, Bentley Whitman, the Wizard, created clones of himself. And lo and behold, 23 is the lucky number because Bentley 23 was the one that survived the cloning process.
Kind of like X-23.
Exactly. And pretty much Reed Richard found him, knowing that the Wizard's one of their greatest enemies, thought, you know, nature versus nurture, how would this clone turn out to be? So he adopted him and brought him into the Future Foundation to be with all the other kids and see how it grows up.
So pretty much Mr. Fantastic's doing a scientific experiment with human life.
Pretty much so.
What an unmoral douchebag.
Well, it's a clone. It doesn't count. It's like stem cells.
Ultimately, at the to start off the books, AIM now owns their own island.
Oh.
Was kind of, and there's this super beekeeper guy, which I don't know who it is, but he's now the new head of AIM. And he was talking to Reed Richards as Reed Richards to be their diplomat, saying, we're both geniuses. We both, you know, have advanced, you know, for scientists. We're going to call this island what it is. It's not, you know, Barbados Island. It's AIM Island. Yeah, it's AIM Island. We are the ones here. We are going to be doing experiments. But what we want to do is go out to the world and say, hey, we're not evil geniuses. We're just pursuing, you know, other type of scientific experiments. Well, the wizard isn't having any of that. The Fantastic Four are coming. He's just going to go all apeshit on them and start attacking them. So what the head beekeeper does is, when they shoot him down with tranquilizer darts, hands the wizard over to a Reed. That ends Fantastic Four with his clone coming in and getting to meet his dad for the first time. So we got Bentley 23 meeting the wizard. FF starts off a little bit before that of knowing that Bentley's going to go meet his dad, and the whole thing hinges on when he meets him. Is there going to be some sort of trigger thing to get the wizard out of there? Is he going to become evil? The whole time, the wizard's trying to tell Bentley, put on this helmet, put on this helmet, the wizard helmet. And Bentley kicks it to him, says no, kicks him in the balls and said, I'm going to be nothing like you, and walks away.
He actually Rochambeau's him?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Bentley.
So, overall, it was the ending story arc of that. I kind of wish, the one thing I wish is that it went out on a bigger bang than that, but it's still interesting enough to know that this little shithead of a kid, because reading FF, he is probably the whole time you're thinking, God, this kid is seriously going to be true evil because of the shit he does. Overall, good story. I wish that it could have been a little bit more of a big explosion, this and that, and less of a more of a character story of Bentley, but I give it a pretty good.
Now, I guess my question is, if somebody was only going to pick up one of the two?
You'd really have to, I mean, to get the full story, but if they're only going to pick one of the two, FF does more of the conclusion. Yeah, so FF22 like, is more of the end story. The first part, like I said, is them setting up the meeting. Then the true meeting and everything that happens is in FF number 22.
Okay. Cool. All right, well, I think that wraps it up for Off the Shelf for us this week.
Yeah, but I think we have a special person with a special long box that might have a special comic book to review.
He's just special.
It out
the magic long box of Kevin that is impeccably in order.
Magic?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm busting out Green Lantern versus Aliens.
Wow.
Yeah,
what?
Now this is Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern. This would probably be a year or two after he was introduced, after the whole Zero Hour.
Okay, now is that a trade paperback or is that just one huge edition?
You know what? I don't know. I think this is just the way how it was laid out is probably just it was a trade paperback.
Okay.
It wasn't like three issues smashed together.
Okay.
I like this. There, my main problem with this.
Now, use your words, Kevin. I know you're special, but use the words.
Why do superheroes have such a problem with killing? That's always seems to be case
killing case people with, or now in this case I mean because
killing period because that's the problem I always have with a lot of DC heroes. They don't want to and respectable, but under no circumstances I'm going to kill anybody. So and that's how this story opens up is you have actually goes back several decades. Hal Jordan and Green Lanterns get together, run across aliens, and they're like, man, these guys are horrible. They're mean. They have acid and other bad habits.
Let's give them a timeout. Don't kill them.
Yeah. So what do they do? They take them and put them on a planet that's
uninhabited.
Exactly.
And it's got a good base.
Like, so yeah. Are the Green Lanterns like the aliens from Prometheus? They're seeding the planets with the aliens?
Good take.
Anyways, go on.
So, well, fast forward. There's no Green Lanterns, but somehow the old Green Lanterns come to Earth. They're powerless. They're like, hey, you're a Green Lantern. You're the only Green Lantern. You got to fix this problem we started about a couple decades ago. And he's like, hey, I got nothing else going on, so we'll do it. So he goes to this planet because a spaceship crashed. And, well, aliens plus crashed spaceship equals bad time. And, well, Kyle Rayner's going there to do a 180 to the situation.
I got a question because I'm just peeking in this. Okay. So if Kyle Rayner picks up another ring, does that make him even more powerful? Or is there... Because I don't really know the Lanterns too well.
No, at that period of time, there was just one ring.
Oh, okay.
Hal Jordan went and collected all the rings, basically destroyed them all, and then there's just like one ring. I forgot how it materialized.
Rule them all.
He probably could have, because the ring was badass. It had no restrictions against other colors, and there was no recharging really necessary to the battery.
So this has given us a lot of background for, like, the old Green Lanterns.
It
looks interesting.
Yeah, once you get past my only issue with it, it's a good fun story. The art on the aliens is really well done.
And just a quick note, yeah. It was written by Ron Mars. Pencils were Rick Leonardi. Inks were Mike Perkins. Yeah. Colors, Dave Stewart.
Cool. Thanks.
By the way, I also looked in here. This is actually collecting the 4-issue Dark Horse comic book series. So,
true
trade paperback.
Okay. So your biggest issue goes to the fact that superheroes aren't killing enough?
Yeah, which, of course, you know, then we wouldn't have this story. If
superheroes killed all the villains, then, you know, there wouldn't be any more villains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in extreme cases,
yeah,
like this.
That's a monster alien with acid for blood.
It's not really a rational being who's about mercy and has a level of...
And yeah, you can't convince it to be nice.
No, I guess maybe he didn't spend enough time getting to know the aliens.
He can get really intimate with one of them, like, sucking his face.
Yeah, maybe like, oh, I should exterminate these guys. But maybe that was the problem.
I bet you he has live mouse traps, too. Just takes them outside and really...
He's got a bunch of green mouse traps all around him. Just makes them in his mind.
Cool.
No, so, if you see this, this would be a full price trade paperback. Really, it was only $12.95.
Well,
back then
that was 2001, I think, if I saw on there right. Cool. Well, I think that'll wrap up the long box. Tony, we're going to jump on to news and notes.
Yeah. One of the first tidbits that I've come across is. Amazon releasing some comic books,
which I'm really interested in. That I didn't even see that.
Well, and it ultimately comes down to this: like what they say in the world of Hollywood is, you got a great idea, it's going to sell. Let's make a movie. Now they've kind of gotten to the place of there's so many ideas, which ones are better, or which ones can we get the most audience are, that they create comic books for it first to see how the audience reacts.
So are we talking Amazon just selling comic books, or are they...
They created them. Right now, the first comic book that they have coming out is called Blackburn Burrow. It's kind of a supernatural Civil War Western era type comic book off of a screenplay by some guy named Jay Levy. That's what this is. This is pretty much a pre-marketing for this script that they have. See how readers react, and you can not only read this for free, download it for free, it's a digital copy, you can get it on your Kindles and whatever, But if you fill out the survey at the end, you get a $5 Amazon.com gift card as well. The problem I have with this is I don't think that they need to start throwing every single idea into comic book form. Yes, if it's going to be a great comic book, but this is just a four-part series to see how well the screenplay is going to react and if people are going to actually like this idea.
So are all four going to be free?
Yes, it's pretty, like I said, okay. It's a marketing gimmick.
There are definitely things that do not need to be in comic books. When you see bands having comic books, you know, just I think I saw Coldplay's going to have a comic book, or maybe not Coldplay.
Dude, I've been crying for that for years.
Yeah, so. and it's finally come out that, you know, Mike the Situation Sorrentino, that douchebag from Jersey Shore, he announced on Leno that his comic's coming out now.
Why?
Well, I mean, we knew about this before just because we happen to know some people. But, well, and it's not like it wasn't released that Wizard World is doing this. But seriously, I mean, like, who the fuck is going to buy that shit? You know, I mean, and do they honestly...
GTO, man! I just picked up the new comic book, man!
GTO?
I don't know. Isn't that what they say?
No, GTO is a car.
Automobile.
GTL. It's the Jim Tan Wander. Okay. I actually had to ask somebody.
Obviously, I'm not the reading audience for this book.
I'm still
not. You
got to
be all excited. Like, oh, we're going to talk about cars. Cars. Awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm with you. I mean, there are things that just need to stay the fuck out of comic books, and there are things that. Don't get me wrong. There are things where I've seen where I'm like, this is a horrible idea for a comic. But when you see it, it's done really well. But if all it is a fucking marketing ploy, screw you.
Yep. So that's just...
Yeah.
So I take it is this is not going to be one you're going to be reading?
Oh, no. No,
but it's free.
No, I don't care.
And they're paying you.
No, I don't care.
I'm interested now because you're giving me $5.
Well, yeah, no, I still don't care because I'm not going to give money to them because...
You know what you should do? You should not read it, but just review it and take the money anyways.
Well, yeah, but what can you get on Amazon for only $5?
Well, music. You can get Gangnam Style.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay. switching to something totally different. Twitterverse, the universe, Facebook even, is blowing up of possible Stan Lee.
Well, it wasn't even that. It actually started with the Toledo Blade because, Alien, did you say?
For what?
No, wow, I gotta quit drinking. You talking Stan Lee?
Yeah, Stan Lee.
Okay. Yeah, Stan Lee canceled a couple appearances in Ohio, and there was a release that he was going to not be making any upcoming appearances for a while. The Toledo Blade reported it and instantly jumped on, basically saying that, like, alluding to he might be having some serious health issues.
Now,
I don't know, being that old, it just might be possible.
It is.
Is that the local paper?
In Toledo, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
maybe he just didn't want to go to Ohio. Charles, no one would blame them.
Trust me, I was born in Toledo, I got family there, and if they didn't live there, I wouldn't want to go to Ohio. But, yeah, I mean, it's Stan Lee actually did release a statement saying, yeah, I'm 89 years old, I've got a pacemaker, but I'm not dead. You know, and so, you know, he may have some things going on, we don't really know, but there's not a health scare right now. So his camp was definitely pissed off that rumors started flying. I mean, yeah. I saw even, you know, people that we know going, you know, wishing the best for Stan, not sure what's happening. But those kind of things only lead to more rumors.
Yeah.
Well, what Matt was saying, too, the guy's getting pretty old that I don't know what superhero serum he has that's keeping him alive so much, but that dude, when he goes, it's going to be a huge...
Well, I think the stage of his life, man, he's got no stress because he's not part of doing the business side of it anymore, really.
Yeah, he's just really a celebrity.
He's going around saying, hey, thanks for reading my comics.
He slaps his name on as a producer and an executive producer.
Yeah, he's the face of Marvel.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's the poster boy.
I think he still has some comics that are his ideas, but that's about it. He comes up with an idea.
He's still pushing Barbarella.
Actually, I did see something Stan Lee, something or other, but it wasn't even a Marvel book. I don't remember.
Yeah, a lot of these are just independent publishers that he'll come up with a name, they'll slap his name on it.
Dynamite,
maybe? Yeah, and then they sell enough to where he's still being told to slap his name on a comic book. Which, I mean, granted, even if you're a person doing a webcomic and Stanley approves, you got tons of loyal listeners.
If you want to come on our show, we'd be happy to have you.
Yes, hell, clear up this rumor of your alien age.
Alien age?
Alien.
Oh, alien.
I would love to know his alien age, too.
Because he might not be human. Maybe he's got clones.
Ooh.
So.
You know what? I'd be happy for just a quick soundbite from him. Is that him saying, like, I'm drunk.
On comics. Excelsior. There was one thing, and I sent this to you guys earlier in the week that I ran across that I am very, very interested in. And it's Ball State in Muncie is going to be doing a free MOOC, which stands with a massive online open course. And it's going to be starting, I think, in March, if I remember correctly. And what it's going to be, the class is going to be on gender roles in comic books. And I guess they already have an actual physical class there at the school. And they had, I think, 17 students that took the class.
They're doing it this semester.
Yeah. And so I'm taking the class. I think it would be just really cool to actually look at some.
It's a free, they're doing an experiment with it for this whole massive online course, whatever the MOOC.
Massive Online Open Course.
There you go.
MOOC.
What the MOOC stands for. And so it's free to sign up for. You're not going to get any college credit for taking the course, but you'll definitely be part of a changing trend, if you will, in higher education. And if not, you might just learn a few things about gender roles in comics.
Yeah, and I mean, it's and they've talked about having ideas of, you know, you could maybe pay $100 or $200 and get like a, you know, some kind of certificate of completion or whatever. What the hell, Tony?
Tony's just found a secret passage in his house.
Well, there's coins in here. So, but yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool. You know, for any of you nerds that are interested in actually learning more just about comic books outside of just the stories and the artwork, I think it might be something interesting and eye-opening. And the cool thing is it's free, so if you don't like it, drop out.
Yeah. Isn't that the real lesson here in life? If you don't like something, just drop out.
Well, especially when it's free. Who cares?
Well, I definitely want to look more into this and see how much time it'll actually take. But it'd be great to learn some things. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I was mulling over was, we all do this. We all throw $10 on the table, and whoever gets the highest passing grade wins the jackpot.
Challenge accepted.
I'm doing a preemptive dropout.
I'm in.
Kevin's okay, I'll tutor you.
Kevin, you can be our teacher then. You can grade our papers.
Actually, I have a better idea. A six-pack.
A six-pack.
Yep, and it's got to be between, like, say, a $9 to $12 six-pack.
All right. I'll do it if it's Scantron tests.
It's all the tests I heard are going to be multiple choice tests, and they'll probably be my imagination tells me there'll be some discussion boards that you sign in on, and they were also talking about grouping people into small groups of about 25. So there'd be a group of 25 that you'd be talking with and sharing ideas with. Ultimately, you'd get your lectures from the professor, and then you'd take some online tests. But that's just coming from someone who teaches at a college and probably understands how they make the online courses.
Yeah, whatever. You don't know.
Well, when this actually gets down, we will revisit this. And
like, is there written any talk about... I read the article, but did they say anything about when they're going to start open enrollment?
No, not yet. It's just something I'm going to keep an eye on. And, right. And when we find out, we'll mention it here on the show for all of our listeners.
And we'll put it up on the interwebs.
Yeah. All right. One other thing we're going to talk about. It's not even really news, but more or less kind of it.
More of a note?
Yes, it's more of a note. Exactly. Matt sent this to us. It's on crack.com, which... Love that website.
You will spend many hours on Crack.
Just reading their list.
So there you go. That could be our interwebs for the week.
Yes. Yeah. Go to crack.com. If you haven't heard about it, you're on crack. The article that we're going to kind of be talking about is five iconic characters you didn't know were ripoffs.
We got to snort out of Kevin.
I'm just thinking, like, if you're on crack, the thing, the last thing you want to be worrying about is...
is surfing the internet.
or whipping out old back issues of crack.
Anyways, there are five iconic characters who you might not know were potentially ripped off from earlier.
Number five was Captain America.
Number five was Captain America. He was a ripoff of a comic called The Shield, which he got his powers by taking a serum, and mysteriously, the person who made the serum gets killed by Nazis.
Hmm.
Also, in the very first,
although back then everybody got killed by Nazis.
This is true. It was the war.
Yeah.
The other thing though is the Shield. It was a character. I can't remember the publisher, but they basically became Archie Comics, and then when they became Archie Comics, they kind of gave up on like the superhero stories. But he wore a big kite shield as like his costume. He was bulletproof. Yeah. The very first issue of Captain America shows him with the kite shield, and then the very second issue of Captain America has the more iconic circular shield.
Well, yeah, because they basically, you know, said, we're going to sue you.
Yeah, so Captain America is one that was not a completely original idea.
Aquaman was number four.
Yeah, we don't really care much about Aquaman.
Because he sucks.
But he was a ripoff of a character called the Shark.
Why would you rip off the Shark to make Aquaman?
But yeah, but then his outfit was like in that same comic book, basically identical to this guy called Mini Midget. Who's a 2-inch tall man. So
well, one of the things they're saying is that his the shark's like superhero costume was did not look much like Aquaman's at all. But when you see what the shark is dressed up like in his normal everyday clothes, it has an orange shirt with green pants. And it looks very much like the Aquaman. We just throw a couple scales on there to make him look fishy, and we call him Aquaman.
Yeah.
Number three was the Punisher, who was a takeoff of a comic called...
it was a novel.
It was a graphic novel.
I don't think it was a graphic novel.
Mac Bolan.
Was it a graphic novel, or was it just a novel? I think it just said it was a novel.
Okay, yeah. 1968 novel, War Against the Mafia.
Yep. The guy's a Vietnam vet, keeps a war journal, just kind of interesting. I really, how many original ideas are out there? I mean, I know when I took a script writing class, I thought they were pretty generous, and they said there's really only 27 stories out there.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard as few as like 15 or 13.
Well, Joseph Campbell has one story, and that's what everything comes down to, the hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Star Wars.
Yeah. Cyclops was number two.
Yep, and he was based off of a superhero called the Comet, which I really loved Crack's sense of humor when they talked about the Comet, is that he basically disintegrates people with his eyes.
Yeah.
And he has no problem killing people.
Yeah.
Whereas Cyclops, it's a concussive force that just knocks you unconscious.
It's like
being punched with an eyeball.
Except sometimes when he wants it to be a laser, he can cut through a wall.
Yeah, but it's just because he like narrows it down. If you know anything about physics, he squints really, really small and it makes a nice edge.
I loved the Comet. Costume
with the stars and moons on the sleeves.
It is great. I would love to play like a Marvel superhero game and have that be like an alternate costume. that'd be extraordinary.
So, but the number one was because there's always a lot of speculation around if Jack Kirby deserves some credit for creation of Spider-Man with Steve Ditko and Stan Lee. Well. They point out the fact that, the Spider-Man is kind of a lot like the Spider-Queen, who was a female superhero from Fox Comics, where Jack Kirby had been working with before he moved over to Marvel. So was there some exchange of ideas? Maybe.
I like how Cracked referred to Spider-Man's, secret...
His big power thingy is the webs.
Well, not just that, but I like how they called his secret identity of Peter Patent Violation Parker.
But the big thing with the Spider Queen is she was a female. She was a dame back in the day, and she couldn't be punching people, so she had web gauntlets, web slingers, that would make this really super strong webbing that would wrap up her prey, and so she'd capture the bad guys with them. And, Spider-Man, he's really strong and agile, so is everyone. He can stick to walls, that's kind of spidery, but the big thing that Spider-Man has always been, I've got webs, right, and I shoot webs. And so that is a very, it's a very clear connection to see the Spider-Queen going to Spider-Man.
Well, not even with this article, there's so many other iconic characters that have been ripped off.
Well, I mean, take a look at a lot of the comics.
Superman and Superboy, and then Power Girl and Supergirl, and the Super Dog.
Yeah.
They're all kind of a takeoff of Superman.
Yeah. Hulk and Red Hulk.
Yeah.
X-23 and Wolverine.
Jamie Madrix and all of his multiple men.
The Wizard and Bentley 23.
So, well, no, but I mean, to seriously, though, talk about it, though, I mean, look at a lot of the comics that came out in Image, you know, when Image first came out. I mean, you look at a lot of those super teams that came out there, and they're all ripoffs of the X-Men or of Avengers or Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, really, how many characters, truly original characters, are there? You know, I mean, how many characters are out there right now that have telepathy? How many of them have, you know, a health regeneration? How many of them are basically impervious? How many of them have fire or weather powers?
Well, if you really want to know, you should play the game HeroClix, because there's only a set number of powers and colors that they've attributed as superpowers, and they just, well, that power's mostly like this power, so it kind of works the same. And there, yeah, you're right, there's a set number of...
Well, that may be just as far as powers go, but, I mean, these are blatant rip-offs, but, I mean, you can tell when it's just having the same type of power, but they're polar opposite people.
Yeah.
You know, that are, you know, yeah.
But it just shows that, in, you know, we hear a lot in the comic book industry about, this person's mad because my intellectual property that I created got stolen by this person. And I think that there's a lot of legitimate claims there for the writers and the artists, and especially with their publishers. But at the same time, too, you know, well, there needs to be a little bit of leniency, because even some of the greats are borrowing artistically.
Well, the Gunners had that the other day, talking about Ghost Rider, and the creators were fighting over with the studio or whoever owns the right of
who created Ghost Rider.
And they were flat out saying it's a ripoff of the Headless Horseman.
Yeah.
It is. That is what his character follows.
Yeah.
How can you say you created that when it was blatantly... And there's so many others from old stories.
I mean, Thor? I don't know if you know this. He's actually a ripoff of the Norse god called Thor.
and those Saxons are coming back for copyright violation right now.
But yeah, so, I mean, on the one hand, I'd love to see the industry give credit where credit is due. But on the same hand, too, it's sometimes always hard to know where artistically you got an idea from.
Well, and I mean, we even kind of touched on that with The Walking Dead, that there's a lot of things in there, you know, that have maybe possibly been borrowed from other books, you know, or TV shows. I mean, you look at the character of Michonne, you know, where she's first seen, you know, wielding a katana and leading two zombies on chain leashes, and that same scene came from a character, Donna, in Deadworld back in the 80s or 90s.
And you can't tell me that Kirkman hasn't read World War Z, or that Max Brooks hasn't read The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
You know, that they borrow, these things borrow from each other. So.
Well, you know, and I mean, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, I was, when I first started reading Walking Dead, you know, it's like I was looking and I'm like reading the opening scene where, you know, you got Rick waking up in the hospital and the world's gone to hell, and there's a zombie, you know, apocalypse going on. It's the exact same opening of 28 Days Later,
mm-hmm,
that movie, which was released a year before that comic ever came out.
Mm-hmm.
So, who borrowed from who?
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I don't know that he didn't have that script written out years prior, and somebody heard about it from the movie and put it into their script. I can't say. But, yeah, there's definitely borrowing that goes on all over the place. But apparently it's been going on for decades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Or these are all clones of people that are stealing ideas, and that's what it comes down to, man. We've talked about clones enough to... Well,
yeah, but if they're clones, they aren't stealing. They're their own ideas.
Exactly.
They cloned their ideas, too. All right, well, I think that'll wrap it up on News and Notes, unless we got any other little tidbits I'm not aware of.
No, not really. I just want to quick throw out a blurb. Have you guys seen the new Wolverine picture that they've been releasing for the movie?
Yeah.
Is it Hugh Jackman?
Yes.
Yeah. I think I've seen every Hugh Jackman picture. It's summed up with Wolverine being angsty and showing his muscles.
Which he does. But
he does.
Yeah, I saw that.
The one thing that is kind of, you know, I know one of the jokes running around is whether or not Hugh Jackman actually has a healing factor himself because apparently he hasn't aged at all. But, but the biggest problem for me is it looks like, and I only saw the picture briefly, and it was either on my phone or on my iPad, one of the two, so it was smaller. But he kind of looks like he's been shaved.
Yeah, well, it's definitely been doctored up. I mean, it could be Stan Lee's superhero soldier serum that Hugh's got now to keep him young.
Ooh, what if Hugh Jackman is actually Stan Lee?
His clone, his younger clone. The one thing I just want to say is I don't like how fake the claws are looking, and if they are as fake as they were in Wolverine Origins, it's going to be a shitty movie. They need to go back to visual effects or whatever, real-life effects of where he
had
real
props.
Yeah, actual props.
Yeah, the shit where he cut himself multiple times in the original X-Men movie.
Yeah.
Which, I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that, too. Sure. Makes it more real.
Yeah. I would also like to see Hugh Jackman with a really hairy, sweatery back, because that's Wolverine.
Yeah.
One of his powers is that he heals because all the hairs, when he gets cut, they go into the wound and heal it.
Well, okay, now, answer this question for me. When Wolverine gets burned beyond belief, his hair magically grows back to the way that it was before.
It regenerates itself.
But it regenerates mutton chops. But it doesn't regenerate evenly. It regenerates up to the same level.
What you don't see is that his hair is always growing, and in the side panels, while Wolverine's taking the leap, he's also shaving
with his claws.
Everywhere there's hair.
Nice.
All right. Let's jump right into the Indie Turnpike.
All right, Indie Turnpike. If you guys are new to the show, this is where we talk about a book that is not necessarily a mainstream book, just to kind of give a little shout-out to some of the ones that may slip under the radar. This week I've got Idolized number 2 from Aspen Comics, written by David Schwartz, art by Micah Gunnell and Pasquale Qualano, and colors were by David Curiel, with the cover done on this one by Humberto Ramos. Little plot and background on this. Leslie is the main character. Her superpower name is Jewel. She has the power to control electricity. Her parents died as a cancer...
I get it.
Yeah, Jewel. J-O-U-L-E. Yeah. Her parents... What if her first name was Julie? Would that just be stupid then? But her parents died as a casualty of a fight between some superheroes and some supervillains. And she entered a reality TV show to hopefully become a member of the world's premier superpower team because she wants to go and kill this guy that was who they had to fight. A couple quick talking points on this. It was great character development in this book from issue 1 and issue 2. There's really good emotion from Leslie in particular. The artwork is really nice and the coloring especially. Overall, where the artwork really shines is in the fight scenes. Some of the regular scenes, they're nice, but the fight scenes, Matt, towards the middle of that, because I know you haven't read this one, I think are really, really well done. There's a really good twist at the end of this issue. She makes the final 10 on the show, and then at the very end she's told that she's been disqualified, and we don't know what the reasons actually are on it at this point. They've got some really cool behind-the-scenes content that they've had both at the end of issue 1 and issue 2. It's really cool, kind of little news articles and some letters here and there. It gives you extra info. And it's not crucial to the story, but it does add an extra dimension, for the reader. So it's a great book, and it's really good for people in their teens on up, so it's as close to an all ages book as you can find. It's not a kid book, and even if you can't find issue 1, you can pick up issue 2, jump right in. You're not going to be lost. So it's definitely worth the time and the money on it, and I know that you were interested after issue 1, Kevin.
Yeah.
So, I guess we kind of covered our interwebs in news and notes, so I guess we will jump into our last segment of the day of Booze in a Book. And this week, Tony, Space Punisher, number 3.
Oh, yeah. Frank is back.
Is that
Galactus
in the background?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because he's in space.
Front cover.
Well, yeah, but he's dead.
He's got the bullet through his head.
Yeah, and actually in there... Tony, I know you have not had a chance yet to read this one yet, just because you got way too much stuff going on this week. But you've got to at least peek through it. It's written by Frank Thierry. Art was by Mark Texiera on this. And I'm pairing this with a mystery stout from Shorts Brewery. which is an Imperial Oatmeal Stout, and it happens to have a 10% alcohol content. So, now I decided that I want to put these two together because when you're done with both the beer and the book, you instantly want more. Frank definitely leaves you hanging at the end of this issue. And even more importantly, neither the beer nor the book are for pussies, so there's your warning.
This is just all sorts of awesome.
Yeah, Tony's flipping through. But yeah, that is a fantastic series. It's so much fun. Had to wait a while for issue 3 to come out, but go find issue 1 and 2 as well.
Yeah,
and
pick wait up. A while, like it didn't come out the next month?
It was a couple weeks late for some reason. You know, I think originally it was slated to come out like on the 15th, but it just came out on Wednesday.
I love the colors.
Yeah. Oh, the art's beautiful in it. So, I do have a couple comic book shout-outs because there were so many good books that came out this week, unlike last week where we were all kind of scrambling just to find stuff to read. A couple ones I really have to mention. Captain Marvel number 4, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick and art by Dexter Soy. God, is this a great book. It's well worth picking up. Punisher number 16, which is written by Greg Rucka, who is leaving, which I'm very, very sad about. Marco Cicchetto did the art, and Matt Hollingsworth did the colors on this. Again, it's been solid ever since I picked it up. I can't wait to finally... I've got a couple previous I still got to pick up. Mind the Gap, number 5, which is Image from McCann. I can't remember his first name off the top of my head. I apologize. And then one other one that I picked up just randomly was Rose and Thorn, which is from DC. It's part of their National Comics. Just a Tom Taylor and Neil Gouge, I think is the name, did that. Great books. So if you're looking for other things to read, go grab them.
What is National Comics?
You know, I think National Comics was an old publisher back in the day that DC might have scooped up. I'm not sure. I didn't have time to research it, but I talked about Looker number 1 because they're all one-shots.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago. And they're kind of different. They aren't superhero books. So, you know, but those are it. You guys have anything else that you want to bring up?
Oh, I'm good for the day. I think we need to go get our Oktoberfest on.
Absolutely. I cannot wait to go drink some more beer. Well, cool. Make sure you guys check us out at drunkoncomics.com. Take some time, go over to the Artist Alley. You know, check out some of the great artists that we have there. If you are an artist or you know one, you want to be linked up, let us know. More than happy to put you up there. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. So, gentlemen, I guess that's it.
You can find us at Oktoberfest later.
Yes, you can. So, gentlemen, I guess it's time to say our goodbyes.
Yeah, you know what? Stan Lee mixed with Apocalypse. Not only would he be immortal, but then only the strong would survive.
What if Stan Lee is Apocalypse already?
Dun, dun, dun. Goodbye.
Goodbye, guys. On behalf of all of us here at Drunk on Comics, I am Derek. Keep reading your comic books, and we'll be back again next week to talk about all of them.
I'll keep reading.
Woke up to the sound of your sigh. Something about your touch doesn't feel like such a difficult time. Why does it have to be brought up at midnight? I just met you for the 43rd time. Seems like it's been so long. Hurts so much when I think about us. Guess I'll give it some time. Play.